This is The State We're In. I'm Jonathan Gruber, and in this special program, we're looking at being gay in Africa. And we've been looking so far at the hostility towards homosexuals in Africa. It's about time we took a look at something a little more positive. Now, in Ghana, homosexual acts are illegal, and gays and lesbians do have to be very careful about what they do. But in the face of adversity, there are men like Prince McDonald who are brave enough to be open and vocal. He's now in his early 30s, and I spoke to him from his home in the capital, Accra, where he told me how life for homosexuals had changed over the past years.
People are more assertive today, and people are more out today. But I would say that I will not be telling people on the street that I'm gay, because it's not safe for me. But I know I'm not shy being gay, and I love being gay, and that's it. For me, it's part of my life.
And what I would like to ask you about is really, can you live anything like a normal life?
Yes, I think my life is normal. I'm living with friends, I'm living with family, my classmates, even though some know I'm gay, that is not the issue. There are few who know, and they will not come to you, or they will not talk to you, and they will be pointing fingers at you at every given time. But for me, I know there's nothing wrong with me, and I know that I have no problem with myself. That's the issue. And they have problems, so it's up to them to deal with those problems. And I try as much as possible to be who I am, and instead of copying or doing what will please them or what they want me to do for them.
Where do you go to meet people?
I meet people everywhere. I meet people today. When you go to the restaurant, you meet a gay person. You go to a bar, you meet a gay person. You go to the beach, you meet a gay person. And so for me, we say, when you say gay, we say everywhere you go, you meet someone. Bars, funerals.
Why is it funerals? Why funerals?
When you have a funeral and you have no gay people coming, then the excitement will be less. So if you have them coming, then you have a lot of excitement, and people will enjoy the funeral. And so funeral is a very big thing in Ghana, and that's one of the areas where people meet and have fun. And
so it's like a party, a funeral in Ghana?
Yeah. You have to dance and dance and dance and dance and get drunk and, you know.
Have you ever been to any large Western cities?
Yes, I have.
You've probably seen how gays and lesbians have become more and more integrated into society, how they become more accepted.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel when you go back to Ghana?
I always think this is where I belong. And then immediately you try to do anything and they say, oh, he's copying from the West. So I always try to remain the African indigenous homosexual. Like, I'm not imported from Europe. I was not imported from America or anywhere. And I tell people, I am a homosexual man from my village in Accra. When I was born in Ghana, I've not seen a Westerner or anything to become a homosexual. And I would not like the idea to be treated as if I don't have sense, like I copy anything from Western. I think there are a lot of things that we Africans copy from Western instead of sexual orientation. We copy everything from Western, because we are trying to improve everything to become modern and to become like it is in Europe or it is in America. So for me, I think it's just a way and the blame, shifting the blame game, that the people say, oh, this is a Western culture. And for me, I believe I'm African, I'm Ghanaian, and I'm a homosexual man, and that is it. I am not a criminal. I don't do anything bad. I don't attack people. I don't rob people. I don't kill people. I don't steal from people. I only love men, and that's my issue. And I'm here, and I'm not leaving Ghana. I will always remain a Ghanaian.
Do you see yourself as a pioneer, Prince?
Yes, I see myself as a pioneer. And then for me, I think it's better you are open compared to being a hypocrite, and then you pretend you are whatever and you are not. For me, I believe that you should face the fact. If you have a problem, let people know, this is my problem. I don't dream going to seek asylum anywhere. I think I should remain here and help my country develop, and that's what I'm here to do. All my life, I've always have this feeling that there's something about Africa that I love, and there's something about Africa that I want to be part of. And I think if I live like others are living, then there will be no one to fight, and there will be no one to help build a diverse society, and the struggle ends. And that's why I want to, that's what I want to avoid. We need to be liberated. We need to be given some freedom to move and to be ourselves, instead of being in a closet where we can live freely as any other person.
Prince MacDonald in Accra, Ghana. Still with me are Scott Long, the director of the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Rights Division at Human Rights Watch, and Ian Swartz, who's a gay rights activist originally from Namibia, but who now lives and works in South Africa. What did you think of what you heard?
Jonathan, there's a lot of it that sounds incredibly familiar. I can remember growing up the complete isolation. I thought I was the only person like this, and at that time there was no word to describe it. I just knew I was different, and I was different in the sense that I liked men. Gay life in Namibia is very, very different to what it used to be. Today, many Namibians access the internet.
Are there gay bars where you can be openly gay?
There are. This is the big surprise that many people don't know, and I wish I could say it's everywhere in the country, but unfortunately it's limited to one bar in the capital city. But, you know, it's a very big step forward. If you think that 10 years ago people wouldn't go into the street saying that they were gay, today when you go into the city center at night, you certainly find people very comfortable in their drag, and not arrest the way they were 10 years ago. They, you know, a gay bar where you can certainly get to know people and all of that. They're gay-friendly bars where gay people are definitely tolerated.
Well, Scott, that's two stories that are kind of bright lights.
The journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, and every social movement, every social change starts with an individual making a decision. And those decisions that people are making, Ian's decision that he wasn't going to be dictated to and dominated by his family, and that he was going to stand up to the president of his country and offer a different voice. Prince's decision that he's not going to be alone, he's going to find fellows with whom he can work for change. Those are the decisions that incrementally are going to change the whole face of Africa.
How many Princes and Ians are out there, do you think?
There are a lot. I have spoken to so many young people in Africa who wanted to be honest, who felt that these huge megaphone multiplied voices coming from their presidents, from the Musevenis and the Nujomas, saying you're not part of our community, who felt that those voices need to be countered, that somebody needed to stand up and say something different, and who tried to do that every day. In Africa, somebody is making a decision like that, whether it means coming out to their family or speaking out in church or writing a letter to the editor. And again, that's where change is going to arise.
Well, Ian, you live in South Africa now. Can you be out there?
Yes, I can have a very out life and live a very open life with a partner and, you know, share a house and do all of that. But I realize that despite the South African constitution being one of the best in the world when it comes to the protection of gay and lesbian people, that that is not necessarily the story of every South African.
There is a very ugly anti-gay sentiment in the country as well.
I don't think, you know, that we can be too complacent and think that this, you know, this is the struggle that we've won, because it's in no way over.
Well, let me introduce a new topic here, and this is something that is happening a lot in South Africa as well, and it has to do with lesbians and something called corrective rape. Now, this is a phenomenon in which lesbians are being deliberately targeted because it's thought that forced heterosexual intercourse will make them straight. And I have a clip for you taken from the Guardian newspaper's website. It's part of an interview with a young man in one of the South African townships.
If there's someone who is trying to rape those lesbians, me, I can appreciate the thing that is there. Because we just to let them know they must be in a straight motion of way. I mean, I have no time to rape them, but if there is some of the other guys who wanted to teach them the way, they must rape them, they must rock them. Once she gets raped with the guy, I think she wanna know a way and to do something which is nice. I don't like them.
And we have a link to that clip on our website, tswi.org. Gentlemen, do you know people who have been victims of quote-unquote corrective rape?
Absolutely. I was in a township outside Johannesburg at the beginning of this year, where a lesbian, a very well-known popular soccer player, had been raped and murdered by a gang of men, apparently because they didn't like the way she looked. They didn't like the way she dressed. They thought she was too manly. And I spoke to, you know, over a dozen lesbians there who talked about, on the one hand, having this really vibrant community of women in the township, and who also talked about being terrified to walk or to look in a certain way on the streets. Of course, there's a massive rape crisis across South Africa, and in one way or another, all women are in danger. But it's also very clear that despite these wonderful paper promises in the South African Constitution, the government has not promoted the Equality Clause and non-discrimination based on sexual orientation affirmatively in the townships or the rural areas, and that poverty is creating violence, and that lesbian and bisexual women are the victims.
And we're going to hear from one of those survivors right now.
My real name is Mapaseka, but yeah, people used to call Steve.
Steve, at an early age, was living an openly gay life. Things were going well with her family. She loved football or soccer. And then one day, when she was 15, a family friend came to the house to sell her some football boots.
I told him to go because there's no one here. He said, no, I'll wait a little bit. And then, yeah, that's when the whole thing started. He just mentioned time and time again that you deserve men, and I'm going to show you how a woman, African woman, should be like, you know, and said, why do you enjoy sleeping with women, or why do you enjoy kissing women whatsoever that has to do with lesbian or like, you deserve a guy who's going to lead you, who's going to show you whatever. Yeah. So yeah, he raped me in my own place. Afterwards, he promised to kill me if I say a word.
Steve told her aunt what had happened. The police became involved, and the family friend that raped her was arrested and charged.
The case took 3 years to finish, up until he was sentenced to 26 years in jail. I didn't attend any of this court session because of the trauma that I had to go through. It was my grandmother and my aunt who had to attend that court case. And the last day when he was sentenced, they called me and said, you won't see his face anymore. You won't even hear him around. And I had to like be relieved at that moment and said, okay, fine, he's gone. It's out of my way, and it left me with scars.
Steve went through many years of counseling, but she's never been able to forget what happened to her at the hands of a family friend.
Sometimes, well, it's even worse now with a lot of hate crimes that are going on in South Africa. One tends to worry. You go back, you reflect. And you've got a lot of rape cases, killing murders and all that. You reflect and you wonder how safe are you if there's a lot of killings like now currently. What might happen next? So you're just not safe in a country or community that you live in. We've got a very glamorous, beautiful constitution, but personally it's not working for me. We're not implementing what is written there. The justice system, the media people are just failing us. So I just get some time. You're even angry to live in South Africa. You can't live anywhere in African region. I'm scared. I don't want to live in any other countries in Africa. South Africa is better than living in Malawi, for instance. Zimbabwe, for instance. I wouldn't want to live there. But yeah, at this moment, got no choice, have to stay in South Africa.
Steve in South Africa. Ian, Steve mentioned there that South Africa does have a very liberal constitution that protects homosexuals, but yet it doesn't seem to be working for her. So why not?
Jonathan, I think like in many other settings, progressive constitutions and laws often do not work for the most vulnerable in society. And in South Africa, I think it's the story of many poor South Africans where they feel that this wonderful constitution that we have simply does not protect them in the same way. If you don't have the money to access great lawyers who can then access the courts, etc., you are simply vulnerable, and often the violence that you have and the day-to-day experiences that you have that actually the police should be protecting you from, that goes unreported and unnoticed. And I'm afraid that Steve, who is a very dear person, who I know personally, is just one of many people who experience it that way in South Africa.
Well, Scott, you actually work to protect people like Steve. But
we try.
But what do you do, though, when there's a real disconnect between what's on paper, what's in the law, and the way people treat each other in real life? They're completely disconnected.
It's one of the hardest problems we face in human rights because, you know, what we try to do is to affect practices but not sentiments. However, you know, the struggle for LGBT rights, and this is true globally, not just in Africa, really is a struggle for hearts and minds. The prejudices are deep, the hatred is being fostered actively, and just changing laws we know is not enough. We have to get at the structures of feeling that support the violence. It's also true, though, that law provides a pattern for how people ideally are supposed to live. And this is particularly true of South Africa, which for most of its citizens was a lawless state under apartheid, and where the promise of the Constitution was creating a new model for society that was inclusive, not divisive, where the divisions of race and gender and sexual orientation would be cast aside. And I think we have to both craft a message to South African politicians, you know, get off your seats and do something about this. Make the Constitution real, but also craft a message to the whole society, which is you passed this Constitution. You passed it because the values in it meant something. And those values have to infuse the way you do behave to each other, the way you treat women and men with respect or with hatred.
Scott Long in New York City and Ian Swartz in South Africa, thank you so much to the both of you for speaking with us.
Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, Ian, for all the work you do.
Yeah, thank you, Scott, and thanks, Jonathan. This is great.
And that is it for our show today, except to ask, what's the state we're in this week?
It is horrible for us in our African tradition. It is horrible.
I don't do anything bad. I don't attack people. I don't rob people. I don't kill people. I don't steal from people. I only love men.
Are there gay bars where you can be openly gay?
There are. This is the big surprise that many people don't know. And I wish I could say it's everywhere in the country, but unfortunately, it's limited to one bar in the capital city. But, you know, it's a very big step forward.
The State Run is produced by Chris Chambers with Mignon Aylin and Albertine Ray. Greg Kelly is our editor. Sid Fordham is our webmaster, with studio support provided by BFN. Jim Russell is our creative advisor, and I'm Jonathan Gruber. See you next week for another edition of The State We're In. In the next The State We're In, we meet a Gazan man whose three daughters were killed by an Israeli tank. He has, you might think, every reason to hate, and yet he says he doesn't hate.
And I don't want to waste my time of thinking of hatred or revenge. The antidote of hatred and revenge is the success.
Find out what our guest, Dr. Izzeldin Abu El Aish, calls success in the next edition of The State We're In.